Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Always a pleasure having you with us today. We're sticking with Paul Nealon. I wanted to have him on the show for quite some time now. So it's great to have you with us, Paul. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Henrik. Really great to be here.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about yourself before we talk more about the campaign and some of the issues that you're struggling with. How long have you been in politics?
Sure. Well, it's funny you ask the question that way. I really don't consider myself in politics, but I've been running businesses my whole career, and I found out late in 2015 that actually it was about the middle of 2015, my congressman, Paul Ryan, was whipping votes for Fast Track for Obama for this Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I couldn't believe he would do that, and so I decided I was going to work on behalf of whoever decided to run against Paul Ryan, and then nobody stood up and ran against him, so I had to do it myself. And so that's the first time I've ever run for office, was running against the Speaker of the House in 2016.
And not a bad start, I guess.
Yeah, right. So when we defeated Trans-Pacific Partnership, you know, after a few days before my campaign, before the election, Ryan went on camera with CNN's correspondent, Mani Raju, and he said, yeah, this deal was poorly negotiated. It needs to be renegotiated. And effectively, he lied, because Fast Track Trade Promotion Authority says that Congress can vote up or they can vote down. They do not get to get involved in the negotiations. So he lied on air, and then I worked my tail off, as did countless other people, to get Trump elected. And then President Trump, his first Monday in office, what did he do? He signed us out of Trans-Pacific Partnership. So I was thrilled about that. I chalked that up as my first political victory, was helping get Trump elected, but truly killing Trans-Pacific Partnership, because that's why I ran. That trade deal is the reason that I ran.
Tell us a bit more about that. I mean, it's great that that's out of the window, but there's many others like NAFTA, and, you know, there's new ones of these coming along all the time. They're making sure that American jobs goes off seas, of course, or they're outsourced to other countries. You guys are losing a lot on that. But why are those so important, do you think, to defeat?
Well, I tell the story about them in this scintillating book that I wrote. You can get on my website. It's called Wage the Battle. And it's endorsed by Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter said, in his heart, you know, President Trump wanted to endorse Paul Nealon. And you couldn't ask for a better endorsement than that. I talk about trade deals in that book. And I bet most of your listeners or viewers wouldn't know that in 1985 we passed our free trade agreement with Israel, and it is all of 13 pages long. And fast forward a decade, NAFTA is 1,700 pages long. Fast forward two decades, Trans-Pacific Partnership, 5,500 pages. And I go into the details of some of those trade deals and the history of trade deals and the history of tariffs in the United States, and how a few small, powerful groups of folks have absolutely undermined American manufacturing and American business and American leadership to the benefit of just a few. And I think that we can get our way back there. I think that we have, I've run businesses all over the globe. I was in charge of a division for a Fortune 500 in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. I was in charge of all of their operations, all of their engineering, supply chain, all of it. And I've closed down two factories in Mexico, one factory in Canada. I've brought all those jobs back to the United States. And I've done all of that more profitably, I might add. I didn't need the government's help to do that. In fact, my whole career, I have been fighting the government because they made it so easy for me to move jobs overseas. If that was the point of what I was trying to do, I could have made myself uber wealthy. In fact, if I hadn't fought Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I tell the story in here of how I could have made myself wealthy, I chose instead to work on behalf of American workers and kill that trade deal, because it would have absolutely undermined my kids, my grandkids, your grandkids' ability to do what I did. Start on a factory floor at 18 years old with a wrench and a torch in my hand and work my way up the chain to get an engineering degree, to run that business, to run businesses all over the globe. And it's imperative that we have that here in this country because it's a meritocracy, right? And what we don't have right now is a meritocracy. What we have is open borders and people like Paul Ryan bringing in cheap labor, illegal aliens, to replace Americans in their jobs. And you don't see Japan doing that. You don't see China doing that. They're not making themselves great by bringing in low-cost workers from countries that are filled with people who don't have the same values as us, right? Mexico's the second most dangerous nation on the face of the earth because, not because of the soil. It's not because of the soil. It's not because of the water. It's not because of the climate. It's because of the people that are there. And I'm not saying all Mexican people are bad because they're not, but I'll sure tell you what, there's a whole lot of them that are. And you can't effectively deport them without a wall or a double fence to keep them out. And I am hell-bent on getting that wall or that fence built as quickly as humanly possible because, again, it's been demonstrated over and over and over and over again how effective a wall or a fence is to keeping people in the country who ought to be in the country and out of the country who ought to be out of the country. And if in the case of America, we don't try to keep anybody in. If you want to leave, you're free to go. I mean, but look at how effective fences were in East Germany, right? Kept everybody in.
Yeah.
And it kept people from West Germany from climbing into East Germany for the most part. So I reject this whole notion of fences don't work, walls don't work, barriers don't work. It sure worked for Israel. They work for plenty of, and I go through a bunch of countries that works for. I mean, look, I'm going to show you one thing that is just the most shocking graphic to look at. So they were arguing about putting up fences over in the EU, and Hungary put up, you can see that.
Yeah.
That was the border crossings in Hungary, right? 9,000 a day. They put up a fence, went down to less than 20.
Is that October 2015? If I saw the
yes,
date there, correct?
Is.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, sir, it wow. is. So, I mean, those are the type of things that I fight for. I go and I do original research myself. I partner up with smart people who also have the same mindset that I do, and I leverage their talents, their God-given talents, and we go fight for America first. That's what we do.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you're very outspoken on many of the issues that most people, frankly, just stay away from, and I want to get into some of those later. But
sure.
Were you always on the page on these things? I mean, you fairly recently showed up in politics or running for Congress. Have you what kind of got you on that page to begin with? How did you become even aware and started thinking about these kinds of issues?
Well, obviously, running businesses, you have to be aware of your surroundings. You have to understand the changing dynamics around you because it's not just your nearest competitor who may be affecting you. It may be somebody in China. It may be regulations in the EU that affect. You know, I've been in power and energy. I've been in food and beverage, and I've been in general industrial applications. I typically work in heavily engineered product businesses. And so you have to be really well aware of the environment that you're working in and understand your talent base and what is missing so that you can give your employees the opportunities to grow. But at the same time, I had an amazing civics instructor back in high school, and he motivated us. He said, you can get some extra credit if you go out and handbill, pick a politician and go out and do some work for them. I thought, you know, get a little bit of extra credit. So this is back in the days, probably before your time, when you would go out with a slip of paper and you would go to somebody's door and you'd knock on it, or you'd put a little handbill inside the screen door, and you'd go to the next house and you'd put a handbill in their door. And I did that. I thought, this is so exciting. I'm getting directly involved in the political process. And so every 2 years, practically, from the time I was in high school until now, behind the scenes, I would get involved. I would make phone calls on behalf of the a campaign or on behalf of the party. I had the call list back in 2014 here in Walworth County, Wisconsin. And when I was sitting in the airport getting ready to go fly to a job, I'd be on my computer and my cell phone, and I'd be going through the call list, and I'd be making sure that people were getting out to vote. And if they answered the phone, I'd ask them if they didn't mind telling me who they were going to vote for. A lot of times people tell me to go pound sand, right? They didn't want to tell me who they were going to vote for, and I totally respected that, but I was fully within my rights to want to ask them, and sometimes people want to talk about it. They want to ask you if you know about a topic, or if they're upset about something, they'll tell me, and then I can feed that information back to the party. And, you know, I was just a good foot soldier in the background. I was a diamond sponsor at the 2014 GOP event here in Wisconsin. I gave $1,500 directly to our attorney general candidate, Brad Schimmel, who's doing an absolutely magnificent job. You know, not because I personally wanted something from Brad Schimmel, right? I didn't max out with Donald Trump's campaign because I expected Donald Trump to do something personally for me. Although I have to tell you, I've got a 4-inch scar in my scalp from a pole pounding incident and a 52-foot banner that I put up along the highway here in Wisconsin. I wanted Donald Trump to win so badly. I wanted him to crush Hillary Clinton, and he did. He did.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is representative democracy. That is what a republic is all about. And when they're doing it wrong, when Trump's doing it wrong, when he gave his State of the Union address the other day, it was magnificent, right up to the point that he said, we're going to give 1.8 million people, and my head started to explode. And he basically said, we're going to give them the opportunity to stay here. No, no, you are going to give them the boot, okay? You're going to give them the boot because right now you are cucking. You are. You are absolutely deciding that you're going to go against what you said in your run, which was they have to go home.
Yeah.
I still firmly believe they have to go home. So they're here right now, but we haven't decided that they're going to stay here. So as far as I'm concerned, they have to go home. And you know who else? Their parents and their cousins and anybody else who is here illegally. They all have to go home.
Why is he changing on this, do you think?
I think he is up against a tremendous amount of pressure in Washington, and he is now thinking that, well, this is how things work, right? You make a deal for this, and we get that. No. Shut the whole thing down. Stand your ground. We want Donald Trump to stand his ground. I don't care if he shuts the government down for months and months and months on end. I don't care. I seriously don't care.
Yeah, it's pressure. That's a good, the really good topics that you have on your site there. We'll go through them all. I want to see what the no cuck zone. That's a good. You have a couple of campaigns, of course, that you've been running on Twitter.
Right.
Which is great. And we'll get into the issues of the censorship and all that kind of stuff too. But, let's just talk a bit about what you, the main issues. Obviously, immigration, the wall, you know, these issues are big for you. As I was going through your site, I see a lot, obviously, about free speech, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, and these kinds of things. What else should people know? What else should we add to that list of the issues that you're fighting for?
Well, I'm a big believer in less government. I think government should be responsive to the citizens, and the government is seven times bigger. The U.S. government is seven times bigger today than it was when FDR was president. Seven times bigger.
They never get smaller.
Yeah, they just pushed through a tax cut. It wasn't tax reform. They started out with 72,000 pages of tax regulations, and they pushed through a bill that was this thick, 2.5-3 inches thick, right? So consequently, do you think that it went from 72,000 pages down to 52,000 pages? No, of course it didn't. it's going to be at least 82,000 pages. And how do we know this? How do we know this? Because if it was going down, they'd have told us, right? We'd have been hearing it every single day from people like Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan would be like a clarion call from the mountaintops telling us how he cut the number of tax regulations. Now, Trump, for his part, he has actually cut regulations, not tax regulations, but regulations like the choking effects of government. Trump said for every new regulation that the administration puts out, we're going to cut two. He's up to like 20 to 1 now. I mean, Trump's doing his part, and guess who's taking credit for it? I know you're going to be shocked, and I know you're sitting down. Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan's taking credit for President Trump's administration cutting the number of regulations. I mean, you can't even make this stuff up. It's so ridiculous. So I'm going to continue to expose this. I'm going to continue to expose the fact that I can have my concealed carry here in Wisconsin and my out-of-state concealed carry in Utah and others in other states, and I still can't have my boots on every bit of soil in the United States and legally concealed carry and protect my life and the life of my wife and my friends and whoever happens to be around me. Well, who determines the value of my life? I'll tell you, me and my God. That's who. Not Paul Ryan, not government, not the governors of any other states. So the Second Amendment says that we have the right to protect our life. And that should not be infringed. It should absolutely not be infringed. So I get into this battle on national reciprocity, and it's led to some of these other battles that you've brought up here on your website. So I won't preempt you. I'll let you go through the question Q&A process, and you can walk us through that.
Yeah, sure, definitely. So let's talk a bit about how you, I mean, you've been reading up on like Kevin McDonald's work and things like this. We've had him many times on the show. We think he brings a very important aspect of what's happening, not only in America, but in other parts of the world, to the table. And of course, you've been kind of caught in the line of fire, basically, of many media, mainstream media outlets, once you begin pointing out some of these, you know, basic facts, basically. And I mean, number of articles in the last, I don't know, week or so, from The Atlantic to Newsweek to Times of Israel, and they all seem to. Was this the issue where they really started coming after you and writing about you in the way that they have? Or did they, before you spoke about some of those issues, were they still kind of all over you in that sense?
Well, let's take a step back and see how this latest round of things started. It was the first week of December, and I had just completed my 18th public town hall. So from July until December, almost every week, I held a public town hall here in Wisconsin. And they were all run the same way. I would typically have them in venues, libraries, town halls, wherever I could get the cheapest venue, because I'm not... my campaign's not made of money. I don't have $10 million in the bank like Paul Ryan does from big corporations. And quite frankly, I never will. I never will. And so every single one of my town halls goes the same way. And it's like this. Everybody comes in. I tell them, first thing we're going to do is we're going to say the pledge. Then I'm going to say a short prayer. Then I'm going to speak for about 10 minutes. And then we're going to open it up to questions. And I want everybody at this time to look around the room and do you see any questions passed out? Did you get any questions passed out to you when you walked in here? And typically everybody goes, and I say, you have to be louder because nobody can hear that. And they, no. So I say, okay, did anybody on my campaign or did I tell you that there are any topics that are off the table? And no, because there aren't. They can ask anything they want. They can ask me about abortion. They can ask me about taxes. They can ask me about Social Security. They can ask me, do I prefer pulled pork or fried chicken? You know, they can ask me anything that they want, right? And we'll talk about it. And if I don't know the answer, I don't know. And I'll write down their question, and I'll try to get back to them on that. So I got done with the 18th town hall. It's first week of December. I tweeted out that I had just completed my 18th public town hall in Wisconsin. This guy, who I'd never spoken to, named Ari Cohn, tweeted back at me, or quote tweeted me, I can't remember, yeah, but just for the white people, and none of you Jews either. I thought, the hell did that come from? And so I basically said to him, where the hell's that come from? Why are you picking on white people? And he made some snide remark like, why would I make fun of white people? I am white. And I said, well, why would you say something to me like this and whatever? And he said something to the effect that he was a Jew. And I said, oh, so essentially you're just telling me that you're a bigot. And I put bigot in three parentheses and essentially accused him of wanting to start a race war with me. And that's where all shit hit the fan. And I had people attacking me from every corner of the planet. And so looking back on that, I really strongly believe that that was a targeted attack because of the speed with which all of it was done. It's too much of a coincidence for that to be simply. Why did Ari Cohn, a guy who's supposed to be for free speech, this group right. called FIRE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why does he attack me? Why does he come out of the woodwork and attack me? He's not even in my district. How does he care about what's going on in my organization? And I go on virtually every show that I'm invited on. I really do. And furthest left, Marxist, anarchist people you can imagine, Bernie supporters who want universal health care, universal basic income. They don't want to have to work, but they want you to work so that they have money. To people who are, I mean, they call themselves Devil's Advocate Radio. They're essentially anarchists. Two, I've been on Fascination a couple times. I've been on Salt the Earth. I was on David Duke's podcast the other day, Dr. David Duke's podcast the other day.
Yeah, that blew up, didn't it, after that?
Yeah, right. And then, in fact, John Cardillo the other day was calling him Dr. Duke, and I said, David Duke. I said to him, you owe him the respect. I don't care if you don't like him. I don't. But you owe him the respect that he earned that title. Call him by that title. And, I've had phone calls with Kevin McDonald. I've had phone calls with Dr. Duke, or Dr. McDonald, excuse me. I shouldn't say that. I've had phone calls with many, 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 many very bright and concerned citizens of this country and other countries who, quite frankly, feel as though, and correctly, I might add, that there are not groups that are. I don't want to say effectively because they are effectively, but that are when they are advocating for pro-white causes are not being attacked by groups like the ADL and the SPLC and these other groups who are overtly lobbying on behalf of a race, right? The ADL is lobbying on behalf of Jews. They're a 501c3 organization, and they are partnered with Twitter, and they're absolutely targeting, they're negatively affecting the congressional race that I'm in. They are negatively interjecting themselves into a federal race right now, and I'm going to put an end to the ADL's 501c3 status. Mark my words, they are going to be sorry that they came after me, because I will never, ever back down. Never. I was born into a family of Marines and Army people who never backed down. If I ever backed down, my dad would have beat me black and blue. He would have. Because he would expect me to take on all comers, and he still does. I love my dad to death. He raised me to be a fighter, and that's exactly what I am. And God blessed me with the ability to walk into a factory, walk into a business, and in about 5 minutes, start to get a good handle on what's going on there. I can look at the I don't even need to look at the financials a lot of times. I can look at what's going on and get a good handle for the flow of the business, how they're handling things. And I can only chalk that up to God's grace. And so I want my kids, your grandkids to grow up in a nation that has Western European values, that have that Nordic never back down, we can make it through anything mentality. And we will. We absolutely will. I am the world's largest optimist. And so I want people to look at me and say, you know what? They just keep beating on that Nealon and he just won't quit. He just won't quit. He won't stop. None of their words have had any effect on me. None of them. Look at it. None of their words have backed me off. And in fact, until a few months ago, I had no idea that the primary group of people who were attacking me were Jewish. In fact, 3 months ago, this is how much of a Boy Scout I am. I didn't even know Ben Shapiro was Jewish. I didn't. And you know what? I wouldn't have cared. If you just said to me, hey, Ben Shapiro's Jewish, I would have said, what does that have to do with anything?
Right.
Really.
Right.
Because I don't care. Now I care. Now I realize that these folks who were attacking me for my stance on a border wall and Trans-Pacific Partnership translated into attacking me on Donald Trump, translated into attacking me on the border adjustment tax, translated into attacking me on a border wall and my stance on illegal immigration, and translated into attacking me for going on any podcast or any show that I wanted to go on. They have no business telling me who my friends are, who I respect, who I want to bring get my message out to. You know what? I respect the guy who wants to vote for Bernie and who has his own radio show and who got screwed out of his candidate being the nominee and who still wants to stand up for Bernie and will have me on his show because he can't stand Paul Ryan. I got more respect for that guy than anybody who thought it was okay to steal the nomination from Bernie and give it to Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I can have respect for people who supported Bernie. I don't agree with them, and I think given the opportunity and given the opportunity to see what Trump's doing right now, I don't agree with everything that Trump's doing. I don't. I absolutely don't. And I've been vocal about when I don't. I don't think bombing Syria was a smooth move. I think it was awful. I think we ought to bring all of our people back from Afghanistan, from the Middle East, and from Africa. And we ought to put them on the southern border, and we ought to build a wall, and we ought to tax all the remittances going to Mexico, and we'll have that $25 billion paid for in 5 years. And clearly, we will have a way to deport people, and they'll be able to stay out of the country. So I'm not backing down to anyone. And I hope that your listeners come away from this. I hope to God that your listeners will come away from this and go, you know what? I could run for county council. I could work on behalf of a candidate in my area, in my little town. I could be on the school board. And when somebody says, well, you can't say you're pro-white, they could stand up and say, you know what? This doesn't rub off, okay? I'm going to be white every single day. And I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to feel bad about that. I can trace my family back to Germany to 1268. If you Google House Nealon, H-A-U-S, Nealon, you can see where my family came from in Welver. And my mom's side of the family came from Transylvania. So I know where my German roots come from, and I'm so proud of that. I spent a bunch of time in Poland. I love those people. I love the Poles. They're wonderful human beings. I spent a bunch of time all over Europe. I spent a bunch of time all over the world. And they're honestly, there are truly wonderful people all over the place. My heart breaks right now for the people in South Africa who are being genocided. they're absolutely being genocided.
It's bad.
In South Africa.
Yeah, it's bad.
We don't see that on the news every day. We don't see it on the news every day.
No.
It's literally breaking my heart. And here I am fighting with people in my own country over having my 18th freaking town hall. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let them win. I'm not. And, you know, you showed some things on my website there that I think are, you've got this Pardon Clint thing up there right now.
Yeah, should we talk about that a little bit? I mean, there's many things I want to follow up on in terms of what you just talked about that, but we can do that after the break. But tell us about Pardon Clint, hashtag.
So my website, electneilan.com, this Pardon Clint initiative, so this guy by the name of Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, he is in Leavenworth right now, and he was posted to Afghanistan. He was there not only a few days, and his platoon came under attack. He was not there, but he was called up on the radio, and Clint Lawrence there on the right-hand side of your screen gave the okay for his riflemen to fire on three Afghanis on one motorcycle headed towards the platoon. Two were killed, the third got away, and they did DNA checks on them, and it turns out that their DNA had been found on other IEDs that had been planted. So they were, in fact, terrorists. Well, that bit of information was not allowed in the trial, and Clint Lawrence was sentenced, and he is now serving time in Leavenworth, and we want President Trump to give him clemency. And so the guy on the left there, he is the first guy who President Trump gave, he commuted his sentence.
Yeah.
His name is Rabushkin. And Rabushkin was convicted of I believe it was fraud. And he had hundreds of illegal aliens in a factory in either Idaho or Utah, and it was an agribusiness. It was some type of a kosher meat house, or I don't know what. But since that guy is the only one that Trump has managed to give clemency to, I'm saying, look, Trump, you said you were going to do things on behalf of our veterans, and here's an American soldier who, under the Obama regime, was held to these ridiculous rules of engagement, and people will say, well, you know, his platoon, they testified against him. Well, if you know how military trials work, they're told, if you don't testify against this guy, we're going to charge you too. The shooters, none of the shooters were charged. Nobody else was charged. The way that Lawrence was held liable for this. And so, if it were a Trump administration, he would have never been charged. He would have been probably given a medal for protecting his platoon, and so would have the riflemen. And so you see how war is being conducted under Trump. He's decimated ISIS, and you see how it was waged under Obama. ISIS grew, and our soldiers were thrown into jail. People like Bergdahl and those five that were traded for Bergdahl are out probably killing more Americans now. So I've decided to help with this initiative. There's already a group, the family, and there's a group on Twitter. If you search under that hashtag on Twitter, you'll find the other groups that are working on his behalf. And so I just want to bring attention to this and get some more people helping with this initiative, because we got to get Trump's attention. We have absolutely, in fact, just a few days ago, somebody told me that they were going to get something into Trump's office on this. So I'm trying to work behind the scenes. I'm trying to get this message across. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of things that we've talked about already that I kind of want to dive much deeper into in the next segment. And we're going to take a break in just a few minutes. I want to ask you a little bit more about the website and also how people can, you know, support you, when people can go out and vote and stuff like that. But one thing I'd just like the audience to know as well, because there might be newcomers to this show and, you know, tuning in because they want to hear you, Paul. They want to try to hear, you know, what you have to say about these accusations that they're reading in the media and all that kind of stuff. And I'm glad that you seem to at least take it on a level where you don't really put that much weight around the issues that, you know, you're openly talking about the fact that, as Kevin McDonald talks about, that there are interest groups in America, probably the most powerful lobby with between AIPAC and the major Jewish American presidents. That's one powerful organization. You know, there's many of these, right? There's hundreds and hundreds of Jewish interest groups in America. And this is, of course, the one issue that you're not supposed to talk about. You're not supposed to notice it. And if you do, there's immediately a barrage, of course. There's a whole media apparatus in place to demonize you and accost you and stuff like that. I mean, I usually think about it like this. If these people happen to be Muslims that were organizing in the same way, most of America would be perfectly fine, I think. Not everyone, but many would not react in the way that they do when it's about the Jewish interest groups, right? If these were Muslim interest groups and they were Muslims in charge and they were changing things or maybe doing things that were favorable to them as a group, as a religion, whatever way you view that, then most people would at least recognize that that was an issue, that it mattered, right? Even the rebel, the John Cardillo guy that called you up and tried to kind of, you know, catch you or whatever he, you know, tried to do, you know, by kind of cornering you on that issue, he would probably have been perfectly fine if there were Muslims group that was doing this and you were pointing that out, right? So it's this issue. You're not allowed to talk about it. You're not supposed to notice it. If you do, there's a whole apparatus in place to demonize you if you do. But what I'm saying is, Paul, that you seem to just kind of, you don't give a crap. You just, you know, this is the evidence that has led you to you talking about these issues, and you're just daring to discuss these issues. And I think that that's refreshing in itself, where you know, we're not putting too much weight around it as it is this hot potato, this dangerous thing that you can't talk about. It's, hey, it's reality. It's what it is. You've noticed it, and someone has to start bringing it up to bring attention to it. And at least ask, honestly, hey, listen, I'm just bringing attention to it. Is there something here? Are these people always working in the best interest of America, or is there something else going on? That's how I view it. But what do you say to that, Paul?
I appreciate your comments on it, and I would agree with your broad assessment. But I'm not trying to. I'm not going through my day thinking of ways to pick at the Jewish race. I'm not. I'd be quite happy to not go into my verified Twitter feed and find out it's verified Twitter users that are predominantly of the Jewish race that have decided that they're going to attack me. But that is exactly the case. And so when you look statistically at who's decided that they're going to come attack me? I didn't make them do that. They of their own volition decided that they were going to drop what they were doing and they were going to come make an attack on me. And when I look at that in the step back from it and look at it in totals, not in the individuals, but in the totals, and say this statistically is improbable. You're not going to have this type of backlash on someone unless, A, you have a stranglehold on it and you think that you can stop someone just by the sheer weight and the magnitude of the numbers that you have behind you. Well, that doesn't make you right. I mean, if somebody comes and attacks you and says, I'm going to take your lunch money because I'm bigger than you, well, that doesn't make it right that they're able to take your lunch money from you. So I think you should kick their ass, right? they have no claim on your lunch money. So if they decide, well, hey, well, we're twice as big as you are. Okay, well, then maybe I'll have to work a little bit harder to make sure that the lunch money that my mom gave to me or that I earned myself isn't going to go into your pocket. Well, then let's go. That to me is how this is going down. And I don't wake up every day deciding. In fact, I wake up every day generally thinking about how am I going to make the world a better place? And I design equipment. I make things better for other people. I've got clients who want better products. And so I'm a silent partner to them. And also, I'm running for Congress. And these issues that revolve around my country whether they happen to be issues that are exclusively pro-white or they happen to be issues that are exclusively pro-citizen, those are encompassing of each other, right? I mean, there is a situation where you could say other people, other folks, I don't expect them to advocate. I don't expect one of the blacks down the street to advocate on behalf of white people. I don't. And I don't think he expects me to advocate on behalf of black people. But I do think he expects me to advocate on behalf of American citizens, right? And I include him in that because he's a citizen, right? I don't look at him that he's black. I look at him as he's a citizen. Just the same as I didn't look at Ben Shapiro as he was a Jew, right? I looked at him as he was a citizen, and I wouldn't want to see Ben Shapiro harmed by an illegal alien, but nor do I think it's Ben Shapiro's comments around, I don't give a damn about this nation, the browning of this nation. I have a problem with that statement.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't wake up thinking, how am I going to go pick on Ben Shapiro? I don't wake up thinking about Ben Shapiro.
Right.
If I happen to be thinking about Ben Shapiro, it's because Ben Shapiro entered my solar system, not because I tried to enter his.
Yeah, exactly. I get what you're saying. So let's deal with a little bit of the issue of how people can support your work, what people can do to help you out in the campaign. When is the what's the next process for you that you're going to go through here?
Sure. So, we'll start backwards from we'll start with the end in mind, right? So the election is on August the 14th of this year. And on that page, there's a take action section. And under take action, you can sign up and you can click one of those radio buttons there in the lower section and say, you know, anything you want. I'll do anything you want. You sign up for your email. And at some point, we'll reach out to you and say, hey, you know, we ask these questions. You know, what are you good at? How can you help? You know, if somebody wants yard signs, when we are ready to deliver yard signs, we'll send emails out to everybody who asks for yard signs. Have them come in, show us an ID so that they're not somebody from Illinois who's trying to steal our yard signs. We've had that happen. And generally run it as a professional operation. I mean, we're taking donations from people and we're turning that into action. People can get on the phone when the time's right, and we'll do calls into the district. You can donate money, obviously. All this stuff costs money. We've run TV ads here in the district. I ran an awesome ad called Paul Ryan's Diversity Lottery Russian Roulette, and that played for a week on Fox News and some other things. We have a very, very lean group of people. We're not, you know, literally my wife and I are scheduling events. We are, in fact, she just went to the printer and picked up the shirts today. She's mailing all the shirts. I signed a bunch of letters to people telling them thank you for buying a shirt. The brand new shipment of Made in America shirts came in today, and they're all getting shipped out probably tomorrow because we've got snowstorm going on here, and I've got those books for sale. We've got bumper stickers. We've got that Dump Ryan squeezy toy thing here. People love these. I've got them on my desk. You know, and I'm thinking of doing something with some other folks, like maybe doing signed books and sending those out to folks. We may do a few different t-shirt designs, and we've worked out a hat design. Hats, Made in America hats are amazingly expensive, but I'm going to have one come out here very shortly. But that shirt, the new shirt, has, in fact, I'll get one of those things up here right now. Give me 2 seconds. And The new shirt has a flag on the sleeve, and it is absolutely they're absolutely fantastic. They are great, great shirts. They did a spectacular job. And the last time that we had them made, they weren't all made in the United States. So I've got some left, and we typically hand those out to people for whatever reason.
That's a good way for people to support the campaign, obviously. Get a t-shirt, sure. Get the book, yeah.
And it's typically people who have already done something who, you know, I want to give them, you know, my thanks. I want them to, I went to D.C., and this was last year. I thought that I was going to meet Phyllis Schlafly. A couple months before she passed, she endorsed me. I had never run for office in my life, and I got Richard Viguerie and Phyllis Schlafly, two of the most conservative people in the nation, two people who have given their life to this country, fighting for American ideals. And so I went to D.C. and I was able to give one of those shirts to one of Phyllis's assistants. And so it was just you know, I was very gratified that I was able to get that shirt to her before she passed. And, so that lighthouse, the way we came up with that was we were going through, we had a couple of different designs, and, there's a lighthouse in Kenosha out on Lake Michigan. And, the lighthouse has a particular, meaning to me, a beacon in the storm. There's a lot of references to that in the Bible. And so that to me is a beacon of light, a beacon of truth, a beacon of hope. And so that is why the lighthouse is on my logo. Really, really means a lot to me. And we worked that out. And in fact, I still have the sketch in one of my notebooks as we were sitting there talking about it. And I went from sketch to some 17 or 18 year old kid getting on his computer and making a modification. It was magnificent. It was just it was a beautiful, beautiful evening. And so, thank you. Here is, let me show you this. So here's a new T-shirt design. It's basically the same T-shirt design that you saw the last time. Difference is, I think it's a little bit more definitive that this.
Is that a day glow this, or what is that called? The flag on the.
This right here is really nicely done, and then yeah, we've got the flag on the sleeve. So I think it's gonna. I think people are gonna like it. I love it. They did a hell of a job. It's real soft, pre-shrunk, made in America shirt. And I'm thrilled about that, you know.
Yeah, that's good. Hold true to the
I'm going to send one to you.
Well, thank you
For having me on. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And you know, you can help out. All that money goes to help support the campaign. It's going to help us get more message out. I hate begging for money, but I got to pick up the phone and make phone calls and ask people for money. And you can't be shy to do that, because otherwise I got Paul Ryan, who's not shy to do it, right? He's got a whole team of people that are calling saying, hey, I'm from Paul Ryan's office and we'd like you to give us some more money. And he's a prolific fundraiser. I mean, the guy can raise money. And the unfortunate thing is he's not doing it with the intent of doing good things for America first.
Yeah.
Paul Ryan is happy to put Mexico first, or put Israel first, put India first, or put anybody else first than America. And it really upsets me, and I think it upsets you guys too. And so therefore, I you know, $5 is not an offensive donation to me, right? It's not offensive at all.
No.
Just, bid help.
You need money just in case. That's how, unfortunately, how politics work in America. You know, it's like a lot of, you know, these other people, they're wheeling and dealing in the millions of dollars, and both from campaigns and contributors and all that kind of stuff. So it's a dirty game, but it is what it is. And if we're going to have someone who brings the real issues to the table, then people have to support you. They have to help out. If they believe in the issues that you discuss and talk about, again, and everything from immigration and the wall to the First and Second Amendment, you know, some of the biggest issues that there are, you know, the demographic question and this stuff as well. So they should support you. That's the end of it, really. And they should put their money where their mouth is, as they say. And what's your last question before we take just a short break, Paul, if you don't mind, and then we'll continue with some of the more in-depth questions after that. But what's your realistic outcome? What are you hoping for? What do you think? Are people supportive of the message that you bring out there? What do you think the campaign is going to, how well is it going to do?
People are very supportive of the campaign. In fact, I'm getting more positive mail and letters and Facebook messages and Twitter DMs and Twitter messages. I mean, it is just growing here. And when I'm out in the district, when I'm in the grocery store, when I see people on the street and they recognize me and they say, hey, I'm a huge fan of yours, we stop and talk for a while. I don't shy away from people. And if people say that, hey, I got a problem with you, you're a racist, and we have that conversation, I don't shy away from those conversations. I'm not a racist. I'm not going to shy away from the conversation either. I'm not a delicate snowflake. And my first inclination is not to go fight with people. It's not. I don't want to give you that sense. I don't back away from fights, but that's not where I go first. If I have the opportunity to talk to somebody and have a rational discussion and I start asking them questions, why do you think that? Why do you think that WKOW just put out an article that suggested I posted 81 people's names and personal contact information on Twitter? Well, we all know that anybody who's on Twitter knows that that's not true. And in fact, I'm in the process of calling them out in my Facebook. Right now, I am private messaging with the assistant manager of the WKOW TV station. They said in their report that I didn't answer the question of why I called people out as being Jewish. Well, they never asked the question. How am I supposed to answer a question that they never asked? And secondly, we all know that I didn't conflate anything. I didn't put people's phone numbers from Twitter out there. I didn't give their personal information. He's conflating that list on tweet number 14 of that tweet string with what I did of that Faces of Hate page on my website, where I, in fact, if somebody called and left me a voicemail message, I put their phone number out there. How the heck do I know what their name is? But I know what their phone number is, and the only way I have their phone number is they gave it to me. So if they gave me a Facebook post or they gave me some other method of contacting them, they gave it to me themselves. There's no law against posting that information when they gave it to me in the first place. If somebody calls me and says, hey, you're an effing blah, 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 and I post that out there, unless they said to me, hey, I'm a Jew, you effing blah, 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 I don't know if they're Jewish or not Jewish. So this woman who was incessantly calling me and leaving me these horrible messages, I posted all of her information out there. Well, it turns out she was Jewish. How do I know that? And you know what? I don't care. If she has time and the nerve to call me and harass me, she can deal with whatever consequences she brings upon herself because she brought them upon herself. The freedom of speech is not a one-way street. It's not. So when these people realize that, oh my gosh, I gave somebody my private information and they posted it and now I'm catching grief for it, huh, my actions have repercussions? That's shocking, you know? So I have no problem with giving people that dose of reality that when they do something that is completely out of the realm of all normal human behavior, and I subject them to their own criticism, and they don't like it, if they don't make the connection between, I did something stupid, and now I'm paying for doing something stupid, then they're too stupid to ever make that connection.
All right, Paul, let's take just a short break here. Go to electneilan.com. That's the best way to, of course, read up more on the campaign and follow along. And also, of course, donate. The shop is there. And then also get involved if you want to do that and take action. But, let's just take a short little break here. We'll be back with the second segment with Paul. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back. All right, folks, that concludes our first segment together with Paul Neilan. Please join us for the second at redicemembers.com as we pick up just after a short break. You need a subscription, go to redicemembers.com. That's the best way to support us. We have tons of shows for you there. The second hour of most of our shows is available for members, but we also have other exclusive material, videos, Weekend Warrior, our live show, and tons of other stuff. So head on over there. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you right after the break at redicemembers.com. See you there.